Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey guys, and we're back. This week with me, I have David Nihal, and he is an author, and he also runs a conference called Funny Biz and Ghostwrites Speeches for CEOs. Hey, David.
Hello.
So, we were just talking about how stand-up sneaks into a lot of areas of the media, you know, like from podcasting and into biz now and into now conferences. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, and it's definitely, I think as the lines become blurred between information and entertainment, all of a sudden, and TED are very central in doing that, even in the name technology, entertainment, and design. They always had that kind of crossover of stand-up comedians being a little bit more serious than pure stand-up comedy, but still being really, really funny. And I think if all of a sudden, it's really penetrated every form quite visibly of content creation. Although a lot of these people, like we were saying right now, like when you think Eddie Murphy or Jamie Foxx or Joe Rogan, you might not think stand-up comedy straight away, but that was the training ground they had before they used those skills and went elsewhere with them.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps keep the audience engaged. You know, if you can be funny.
Yeah, and on the marketing side, you're seeing people like Scott Scranton or Gary Vaynerchuk, and they're pretty much doing a lot of stand-up comedy bits and using their techniques. And in Gary Vaynerchuk's case, if you ever listen to him talking about his influence as public speaking, he'll tell you he only ever pays attention to three people to guide his behavior on stage, and they are Chris Rock, Richard Pryor, and Eddie Murphy. And he exclusively bases his styles on that. And if you look at people like John Acuff as well, or Dory Clark, you're seeing a lot of people who are kind of solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, very active marketers, and they're also doing or studying stand-up comedy as a way to get their message heard loud and clear. And it makes sense when you think about it, but it just sounds scary when you put it out there first.
Yeah, the one thing I found in sales, and some of the trainers that I had actually didn't like it. They're like, oh, what are you, a funny guy? But what I found is that if I can make someone laugh and then pitch and then make them laugh and pitch, like, they're much more receptive, you know? So I actually, that correlation, it worked for me. I don't know about everyone, but I found if I can make someone laugh, I'm 99% going to sell them too.
Yeah, and I think there's a, I can't remember who the quote is attributed to, but I think it's a powerful one that sums up exactly what you're saying. And it's, the end of laughter is followed by the height of listening. So the most attention you'll ever get from anyone is that moment after you make them laugh because of the dopamine spike. So their brain is literally saying, give me more. But it's also the perfect moment to drop something serious on someone, like going to close a sale, like laying out some of the numbers behind it, and then back to the lightheartedness and back to the serious again. And it tends to work really well.
Yeah, that was something that I wish someone taught me, though. You know, it was something I figured out just by doing thousands of sales calls.
Yeah, I think it's just sheer repetition. A lot of people have a predetermined belief of they're either funny or they're not. So for some of them, they don't recognize humor as a skill. But if you recognize it as a skill, and if you see someone do stand-up comedy in year one versus year 10 of them doing stand-up comedy, there's no comparison. They may not have got famous for being funny, but they will have gotten much funnier. So they're usually illustrating that there's a process behind this, there's some techniques, and there's an element of skill. And if you recognize it as a skill, well, then of course it can be learned and improved upon and applied to pretty much anybody who's willing to put in the effort.
How do you teach someone to be funny?
Yeah, I mean, in life, I wouldn't even start to try or claim to. So the work I did was just leave it alone. You're either funny or you're not. But on stage, to be honest, that's very much trainable because there's certain things you're doing over a short period of time. So for a 10 or 20 minute talk, absolutely anybody could be funny. You just need to do certain things. So when we're working with CEOs, we have a whole team of comedy writers rewriting their script, and we actually analyze the metrics on that, and we can tell you, hey, this speaker in a 45-minute talk made people laugh 9 times, reworked it, And then we videoed it and they've gone out and delivered it. And now we can see they made the audience laugh 51 times. And that wouldn't be out of the ordinary with the results we see when we're able to do things. So what are we doing? We're just shortcutting a learning process so they don't have to go through it by having comedy writers who know how to certain structure, certain material, and deliver it in a way that's most likely to get a laugh. For example, taking a funny key element and making sure that key element is at the end of the sentence. Has a huge impact of your timing and your delivery and your chances of making people laugh, because you're giving them the maximum chance to pay attention and maximum chance to actually react. So I don't know if you know, John Acuff is the speaker. He's really, really good. He's a 4 or 5-time New York Times bestselling writer. And he had a bit on stage once. I saw him deliver a nice short story about his family. And he's saying, well, my daughter really wants to get a cat, but we can't because my wife is allergic. And then one day he said, my daughter scrunched up her arms and looked at me and said, we can get a cat when mom is dead. And of course, it's funny, it's cute, it's not amazing viral hilarity, but you'll notice that that sentence makes no sense until he says that, and we can get a cat when mom is, still makes no sense. The key word is dead. That's the word where you realize what he's really talking about, and the bit of a twist, that's what makes it funny. Yeah. It delays it to the last possible moment, and if that's at the end of the sentence, then you've built an automatic pause for the audience to react. And it's just knowing things like that allows you to shortcut the process a bit. So can you make someone funnier in life? I mean, you can a bit if they're constantly, you tell them techniques and they try and apply techniques like that. But it's quite easy to do in a short period of time, and it's quite easy for anybody to do if they have a talk coming up where they're like, I'm going to put some humor into this.
Yeah, but even the example you just gave, it's sort of like I laughed because it's one of these like dry humor things. You know, it's like, you can imagine someone that's super unfunny and you just write them funny material and but they can't deliver it as someone like, obviously, Eddie Murphy or Chris Rock, because it's, you know, that's a skill of its own, the delivery. So you're hearing this stuff and you're laughing, but you're just like, something is a little off.
Well, as long as, honestly, no, I wouldn't agree with that on the delivery side of life. And what we see with speakers is we try and write in their voice. And if the story is their own personal story, then the delivery never really seems off. They're just talking. They're not public speaking anymore. They're just up there sharing information with you. And if it's very personal to them and they just say it in the right way, which is usually just boils down to in delivery of standing stationary for the key funny part and shutting up after you say it. There's really not much else you can screw up around delivery than doing that. Raising your voice for the key word helps a little bit, and slowing down the very last part where they're meant to react helps a little bit. But honestly, it's very usually in the content you create, in the stories you have, and just telling it in a way that maximizes your chance of success. And there's very few things you can do on delivery that will stop that happening, unless you're doing something really wacky, running around, windmilling your arms all over the place. But making eye contact and moving your hands in a certain way, like a lot of people are trained to do, is very, very much secondary to what you're saying. Rubbish content delivered beautifully is still rubbish. And you nearly end up freaking people out by it. But if you're just telling, you really look like a lunatic. Like, if you have words that are not resonating with anybody, but you're delivering it with great pause, and you're training, and you're using acting, blocking techniques, and walking around, moving your hands in a certain way, and really holding mildly awkward eye contact with people in the front row, they just kind of think you're nuts. Because you're putting all your effort into how you're saying something, as opposed to what you're actually going to say. And I think, to be honest, there's a bit of a myth around that, because if you've ever been subject to public speaking training in life, it's likely from a large corporation, and the person who trained you has likely never, ever been on stage. They've only ever been given training material and trained to train you. And it's very hard to train you how to create content if you don't really know how to do it. So nearly all these companies focus on delivery, which is kind of easy to show someone rapid improvement. Like, look, you were nervous and you did strange things with your hands. We videoed you. We showed it back to you. You could see the nervous movement with your hands. Don't do it next time. Like, some of the best TED Talks in the world have everything in them that you're going to say someone who focuses on delivery will say that can't be there. Very strange hand movement. You're walking around, you're rapidly pacing, you're moving too fast, you're scratching your face, you're not holding eye contact, you're saying, but filler words. Filler words are part of every great talk there's ever been on some level. But, you know, if you haven't been on stage a lot, the only thing you can mass train people to focus on is delivery, whereas realistically, the content is what makes you look better faster.
You know, what you mentioned about corporate trainers, that's actually, there's nothing I hate more than corporate trainers. And I'll tell you why, because I've went through a lot of corporations when I was training for sales. And the one thing I realized by taking these trainers in the field, they can't sell for shit. They're training us, they're giving us scripts, but they can't sell a thing. Like, they couldn't sell anything. It was just, it wasn't even hilarious. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, and it's funny that, I mean, there's a lot of successful coaches in the world of football or sport or soccer or something, that actually haven't made it at the highest level. But you'll find usually the very best ones these days, most of the time they have some level of success or practice on what they're preaching. But yeah, if you give me a bunch of corporate public speaking trainers and you give me a bunch of comedians and we had like some kind of public speak off where we gave them any topics in 2 minutes each, like there's not even a debate who's going to come out on top of that. The comedians are on stage pretty much every night a week in the most difficult circumstances possible. And they really are, for me, Malcolm Gladwell's true kind of 10,000 hour masters of this topic. And if you take the time to ask them something, they just have a massive pile of knowledge. But obviously, they're pretty cut off from the corporate world a lot of the time. So we hadn't traditionally seen that crossover, although in the last year or so, I'm seeing that more and more begin to make that connection as TED Talks get funnier. And every one of the world's leading TED Talks are funny. Very funny, in fact. Some of them are actually will make you laugh more than the funniest movies of all time. Or if you watch marketers like Seth Godin give talks, they're really, really funny. And if you go on after them, you're like, oh no, I'm next. They're killing it. So all of a sudden, people are kind of feeling that pressure to be funny in the world of public speaking, or at least some level of entertaining. And you don't have to be, but if you want to get paid to do it, you do have to be.
Yeah, I've seen a trend lately of people taking up stand-up, or at least trying to. And this is from guys like some of my smaller business friends to like James Altucher. You know, he was talking for a bit about, oh, I'm trying out stand-up now. Yeah, so that's what I mean, right? Like, it's a trend, and I think it's a good trend. I actually am all for it, but what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, from what I can see, it is 100% a trend. It's happening a lot more, and people are realizing, well, if I need some experience in public speaking, what's going to teach me the most, the fastest, with the least risk of impacting my profession? So usually a stand-up comedy, it isn't filmed, it's away from the limelight a bit. You know, if you're just starting out, it's in a room that doesn't have that big an audience. But equally, it's much more real and live feedback. I mean, you really don't know how you're doing in the world of public speaking until the audience laugh. And it's kind of that one moment where you're like, oh, this is going well. It's kind of instant feedback. Whereas if you're in a public speaking group like Toastmasters or something, they're nearly overly supportive. And then you go out to the real world and you're like, oh, no, these people are not paying attention to me whatsoever. Whereas a comedy club, like literally sometimes the audience had a terrible day, just got fired, maybe broke up with their spouse, came in, folded their arms, grabbed two or three beers or whiskeys and went, make me laugh, idiot. And again, in 12 seconds. And it's very hard to match that kind of pressure, especially in the corporate world where we've all been to conferences and your expectations are so low. You actually go looking, the first thing you think when you get in there is, where's there a plug? Like, is there an outlet to plug in my phone or my computer? I'm going to need it today because these speakers are going to be rubbish. And when there's a good one, it nearly actually catches you surprise, which is sad, really, when you think about it, because you should be expecting a whole full day of great talks. But you really, based on historical people getting up and boring the pants off, you usually don't. So the ones that have trained in comedy, they really stand out. And then that's the conference I've been running for 4 or 5 years. We've been trying to find people like your James Altuchers and like your Dory Clarks and Jim Costlow, who was the head of Twitter. Hopefully I didn't just rename him there, but his last name is Dick Costlow. Actually, yeah, I did. Dick Costlow is the name. He used to be a stand-up and improv comedian before he became the CEO of Twitter. And they're the kind of people I want on stage all the time because I know they're going to be so much better on stage, so much shorter in their content and more effective with less words.
How many people attend the conference usually?
We've always kept it pretty small. So I'd say 250 to 300 every year that we've done it. And we've done it by invite only most of the time. But yeah, it's always been a good crew.
Yeah, I just seen some pictures of it. It looks really great.
It's random. It was a bunch of people that we just really saw this correlation between leading content, funny marketing, and great speakers. And the one thing they all seemed to have in common was someone who had a real passion for comedy. And we just wanted to bring all those people together.
You mentioned writing for CEOs. What sort of feedback do you get on, you know, this comedy meets business from the corporate world? Because I just feel like they're not funny. They're not funny at all. Like all the businesses that I've been, they were bigger than 100 people. The guys in charge, just they're not funny at all.
Sometimes, and it is important on the stamp of the company how quirky those individuals are. So I've dealt with a lot of companies over the years that have been very funny throughout, and that quirky kind of randomness was encouraged top to bottom, and it usually came from the CEO. But yeah, I've found a lot of them to be pretty funny when they relax a bit. It's strange. You wouldn't think they are. The minute you say the word corporate, and if I'm trying to sell humor to corporates, it's a whole different thing. Automatically, it sets off all the alarm bells. But where you draw the line between engagement and humor is really the key to leveraging that into companies. Everybody has a problem with engagement. So whether it's employees to take training courses or people to pay attention to you or social reactions to your marketing material, usually that engagement number is lower than you want it to be. Nobody thinks they have a problem with how funny they are. And as soon as I go in and say humor, at least 50% of the people, all the alarm bells just went off. So I think it's just a matter of rethinking it. Sometimes like humor used well, I mean, you'll remember President Obama's speeches. They were always funny. He had a team of comedy writers behind writing a lot of them. There wasn't really a risk there when you had people that knew what they were doing, and they had easy targets for that humor. And a lot of it was self-deprecating, and companies can be the same way with any bit of effort. But yeah, when you're talking to CEOs or you traditionally think of companies, you don't think funny. You don't think they have a problem with being funny, but most of them will admit they have a problem with being engaging, and the two are definitely linked.
Yeah, that's the one thing I always feel is strange when people say, "Hey, you know, Obama was such a great speaker." I'm thinking, was he? Was he really? Or was the team of the comedy writers he hired just so good?
It was a mix. He was very good, but he was also the first president in history to read all his speeches from a teleprompter, as far as I know. And I know a couple of the guys were writing for him that very much have very heavy comedic background. So it was a mix. And his delivery was very good. But again, they're writing the words on a teleprompter and the pause points are marked there. So it certainly helps that people are writing in a way that maximizes your chance of success. But he was definitely a good speaker. He had a good, funny, lighthearted, off-the-cuff moments quite a lot of the time. But yeah, having a team of comedy writers is certainly helpful.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Because I did see a video once where the teleprompter just died and Obama froze.
Yeah. You know, that's your worst nightmare. If you're used to, you know, and he's given so many speeches, there's no way you can memorize the words to every widow's speech. Sometimes you're just turning up one day to the next and expecting that everything's going to go according to plan. So I can imagine that would be a pretty nerve-wracking moment.
Yeah, but what I kind of thought about at that moment is like, why doesn't he improv a little bit? But he just stopped. He froze. Like, he's like, I cannot say anything on my own. If this thing isn't on, I just can't talk. I don't know. There's just something about that just doesn't feel great.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, but we don't have high expectations for political speeches to begin with. He was the one who nearly changed our behavior because we're like, oh, President Obama's speaking. This could be good. Now with Trump, it's like, what's this lunatic going to say?
Well, Trump is just improv all day. Like, I'd rather not even get into that. But, you know, I wouldn't want
to be one of his speechwriters.
I think about Bush a little bit. You know, a few times where he tried to crack a joke and he forgot the punchline and he just kept on fishing for it. And it was just like, oh, boy.
The thing is, if it's very clearly a joke, you have a very clear chance of failure. So it's nearly like that moment. You might have had a boss at some stage in your corporate career that was like, oh, come into my office. I have a great joke for you. Sit down. And you're just thinking, oh, my God, get me out of here. This is going to be terrible. Because they very much telegraphed their intentions to be funny. And if anyone given a speech does the same thing, it has a very high chance of failure because you know they're trying to be funny. Whereas what really good speechwriters will do is usually weave something in the way of a narrative or a story, and the funny bit is moved to the end. It's normally area of violation in a sequence of three. So it kind of changes your expectations a bit. And you think you know what's coming and you don't. And it's very much at the end. And it is a story or a narrative. So that means if you didn't laugh at it, well, then it's just a story and that's totally fine. You weren't calling it a joke. You weren't building it up as a joke. You weren't introducing it as something that's going to be funny. And I think that when we're doing speech writing for people, very seldomly is it ever something that's quite a visible joke. It's normally something that it just feels like they're just being themselves. It's something funny that they're just sharing with you. And if you don't laugh, there's never a moment where you're like, ooh, that's kind of awkward.
Could you give any tips for people listening now that maybe have something they wrote, how they can go over it and add funny bits into it? Like, how would you look at a piece of text?
Yeah, a lot of the time it's just a matter of putting a kind of funny filter on it where you're, and a lot of writers talk about doing this. They get the information down as they want it, as they know it, and then they go, right, I got to go back and look over this specifically to try and add some moments of levity to it. And then the question is, well, where do I drag this content to? And a lot of comedians will keep a list on their smartphone, literally called funny story file or funny things. And every time they see and hear something in any way that makes them laugh, they write it down. Anytime a memory is jogged from a funny story that they totally forgot about, that just a memory popped into your head from listening to somebody else talking about something similar, they write it down. Not word for word, but in bullet point format. So that when you go back over something and you want to introduce a little bit of levity to it, you basically have a list of content where you're like, what can I shoehorn into this here? And the world's best speakers will take stories that they're usually already comfortable telling. They know that their friends have laughed at this. They know that most people will laugh at it. Not only do they know, they know they will laugh, they know where they're likely to laugh. And they basically put those stories in the shortest, most effective form possible. And they'll focus on getting a line in there that makes it totally logical for them to add in that story. And sometimes that line is just, I told you that story because fill in the blank. So there's always some little lesson in a story, and it only has to be extremely loosely related to your overall topic. So if I'm talking about technology, I can talk about my parents' struggles with technology, no problem. So my dad loves sending me emails, and he usually sends me them all in the subject line. Every word of his emails is in the subject box. Kind of strange behavior, mildly entertaining, is enough to spike your attention and you're like, oh, that's kind of goofy. And then there's just a lesson in that. You can never assume that people will use your product as you intended and then into your point. But it's just making those connection statements that are often the missing link. Because people will have a story and they'll go, oh, there's no way I can use that story. It's not relevant. Whereas the world's greatest speakers will go, I'm going to make that story relevant. Big difference.
Who are some of your favorite comedians out now? Not some of the all-time greats, just the ones out now.
I mean, being from Ireland, I love the Irish style of humor, I must admit. So Tommy Tiernan, probably one of my favorites, or Dylan Moran from Ireland. Billy Connolly, historically from Scotland, I'm a big fan of. And then in the States, I have a mixed bag, but I like a bit of everything, to be honest. I find I'm always kind of breaking it down. Once you're familiar with the techniques they're using, you're nearly like, oh, what's he going to do now? Oh, he's definitely coming back for that joke, or she's coming back for that at the end. Puts a different spin on it. But yeah, for me, it's always the Irish or British kind of style of humor.
Can you recommend any books that help with the techniques of being funny?
Yeah, I mean, probably the best one I've ever come across is by Scott Dickers, and he is the founder of The Onion, the satirical newspaper in the States, and it's called How to Write Funny. So if you, what comedians tend to do over time or tend to get better at is they put more effort and focus on their writing. So as their comedy career develops, they become better writers. So you can shortcut that learning process a little bit just by starting out by being a good writer. And very few people will feel they can't become a better writer if they just try a bit every day. So I think his book is probably the best one I've come across. I have a whole bunch of recommended ones on Quora, is that the name of it? Where everyone answers questions online. I have a list of books on there that people can access just by putting in that very question, how to get funnier. And of course, I wrote a book on it. My one is more aimed for public speaking as opposed to general life, but that one will give you a good basis as well. But my personal favorite one is Scott Dicker's one.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on, David. And where can people find you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Everything I've mentioned or anything I've wrote about this topic, you can get for free on the blog I keep, all linked to David Nihill, NIHILL.com. So everything, one way or another, you can find it there, including that list of books I mentioned, video examples of a lot of these techniques, and a list of tips that you can download for free if you want to have a go at this stuff.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Lee Bell. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.